Good morning and welcome to Law of the Land with Gloria J. Brown Marshall. We are on WBAI 99.5 FM, WBAI.org, and we're alive to feel, see, be a part of another day. Let us rejoice in it. We are in the middle of a pandemic as we speak. Globally, over 40 million cases around the world. Over 1 million deaths globally. In the United States, there are over 8 million cases of COVID-19 and 220,000 deaths. That is what we're looking at as we go into the next and final debate on Thursday between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. And at the same time, we have Donald Trump with his take on COVID by saying during a telephone press conference, quote, "People are tired of COVID." He's complaining of Dr. Fauci. He says, "I have the biggest rallies I've ever had, and we have COVID. People are saying, whatever, just leave us alone. They're tired of it." And he goes on, and you can read more about it in an article in the New York Times dated title, "Calling Fauci a Disaster, Trump Shrugs at a Spike of Infections in the U.S. President belittles his scientific advisors as, quote, these idiots, unquote, as election nears." That's the title. And that is what we're looking at this point. An election that is so close, November 3rd, over 28 million Americans have already voted. Early voting. Our early voting in New York begins on October 24th and goes until November 1st. And remember, your early voting polling places may be different from your regular polling place. And I saw that myself. My regular polling place is in one building, but my early voting polling place is in a different building two blocks away. Also, make sure that when you are filling out any of the information that's required for the mail-in ballot, that you have the name on the envelope, the same as the name on the ballot. Your name must be exactly the same or there'll be a problem. We know that Governor Cuomo has initiated an executive order that we have until October 24th. You could phone, call, email, get that absentee ballot. And you can get the absentee ballot for issues of illness or fear of COVID. Remember that absentee ballot must be signed. On the date of the election, there will be people available to give provisional ballots, but we don't want to wait until the date of the election. There's so much going on. We know there's going to be litigation. There's litigation right now. We found that in certain states, there are fake ballot boxes. And those fake ballot boxes in California and other states where people are dropping in their ballots only to find out that someone created, GOP members, created these ballot boxes. So we don't even know if these ballot boxes are indeed valid. We know in Texas there is an actual executive order requiring that the ballot box be one per county. If you can imagine the size of Texas, the landmass is immense, and one drop-off ballot box per county. And so these different forms of voter suppression and other issues regarding voting, we will focus on in our next program. So be here next week and we'll have our voting rights experts back to discuss what we're looking at going into this election. And remember, this election is about more than the presidency, even though that is very heavily weighted on our minds. It's also down ballot. And so look at those other issues on the ballot. Look at the other candidates on the ballot. Trying to actually get the word out about how they are different from their opponents, how this election should be turned in a certain direction based on these very important issues. That's what these other candidates have been probably finding it difficult to do because it's been difficult for them to have rallies. And we know that even Kamala Harris had to end some of her rallies when two of her campaign workers were diagnosed with COVID. But we're going to have more about the election in the time of COVID. Remember that 100 years ago, we had the Spanish flu. And until now, the Spanish flu was the worst pandemic in our history. Prior to that, of course, we had the plague, and that was back early, many, many hundreds of years before the Spanish flu. But let's focus on the Spanish flu from 1918 to 1920. These three things I want you to remember about the Spanish flu. One, that it was airborne, and people wore masks. That's the reason why we had a Spanish flu. You don't even know we had it. No one even talked about it until this pandemic because people survived it. But they survived it because they had social distancing and because they wore masks. And there was not a real cure at the time, but they found ways in which we could get a vaccine. And that vaccine took time, but people did social distancing and masks. And there were ways in which they tried to prevent the deaths from spreading, or this virus from spreading, and prevent more deaths. But what is the other two? What are the other two? Well, we still had a presidential election during the Spanish flu. And unfortunately, sadly, contemptibly, we had the Red Summer of 1919, which was a time period of the worst race riots in American history during the summer of 1919, the Red Summer, in which you had these white militia groups, terrorists, others who joined in, piled on, attacking black people and people of color. That was in the summer of 1919. All of those three things happened in that era of the Spanish flu. I want us to think about that when we're dealing with what we're dealing with now. I write about legal history. You know, I have a new book coming out, She Took Justice. You know, I also have a book, The Voting Rights War. I write these books about legal history because the law plays a role in how we have defined ourselves. The U.S. is the most litigious country in the world. We have more laws, more lawsuits, more judges, more lawyers than any other country. But we don't know how the role of law has been that too often in oppression, more so than liberation. And we have to follow that role of law. And we're going to follow the law as it's being created by Manuel Gomez. And you know Manuel. He was introduced to this program when I went to Sundance Film Festival several years ago. I saw this amazing documentary, Crime Plus Punishment. He was someone I met personally there, and I said, you must be a guest on my show. And from that moment forward, we have been talking about what he has done as a private investigator, but also his work as a lay person, a regular person, creating law. He's going to be on the show after this musical break, and we're going to talk with him about the Accountability Act. The Accountability Act is an act, a proposed legislation he has created. He's not a politician. He's not in any governmental office. He wants us to know, in order for your government to work, you need to know how to work it. And he is creating his law in order that these people who are in these positions, prosecutors, judges, and others, will have some accountability. So the Accountability Act is a proposed law he's going to be talking about, and many other things. And we have with us our guest, one of my heroes, Manuel Gomez, and he's going to be talking with us about the Accountability Act, but more importantly, he's going to be a living example to all of us about how we can create law. Manuel, good morning.
Good morning, Gloria, and thank you for having me on the show, and I want to thank everybody for taking the time out and listening to today's show, but thank you very much for having me.
Well, Ben, well, you know that you and I first met in Utah in the freezing cold at the Sundance Film Festival. And when I saw Crime Plus Punishment as one of the documentary films, it's gone on to win many, many awards. But you were somebody I wanted to have on our program because of the work you were doing as a private investigator. And your website, Black Ops, OPS, Black Ops, and you're an Emmy Award recipient since that time period because of Crime and Punishment. But you have also always been on the ground helping people. But now you've taken all of that to a whole other level with the Accountability Act. Tell us more about the Accountability Act. Manuel? So we're trying to get Manuel back. In the meantime,
can you hear me?
Yes, now I can. Please stay with us.
All right.
So the Accountability Act, tell us more about that.
So what happened is I've been investigating all these cases of corruption throughout the states. And I've been finding out corruption within the prosecutor's office, corrupt judges, and so forth, and corrupt police officers. And one of the things I found disturbing was that they have this law that we have, it's called the immunity clause, which means that if a prosecutor falsifies a case on somebody or holds back evidence or a police officer beats you or violates your civil rights, you can't sue them. They can beat you, do all these negative things to you, and there's no ability to get financial compensation from them. So the taxpayers have to pay these hundreds of millions of dollars. And I'll give you an example. In 2019, New York City paid $220 million for prosecutorial misconduct cases and police corruption cases. $220 million. That was just New York City. Not counting the state, there's over $450 million. So almost half a billion dollars is spent on corruption, and nothing is being done to resolve it. And the taxpayers pay this. All of us pay it. So I wrote this new act, a bill called the Accountability Act, and what it does is it gives the people now the ability to report corruption and to sue that cop or that prosecutor, all right, for financial compensation. And not only that, but it also puts in effect a 30-day suspension. So now a person, if they're accused of this corruption or violating your civil rights, like a prosecutor holding back evidence or lying in court, they will be investigated for 30 days with pay. And then after that, after 30 days are up, they have to have a hearing. And then if the hearing finds them guilty, then you can sue them for up to $50,000 or 5% of a settlement, whichever is left. Now, what this is going to do is going to cause the wicked and the corrupt to pay for their actions. In essence, it will be a deterrent to stop this type of corruption. It will be another mechanism to prevent the corruption that is currently we're seeing nationwide. And the reason why we see this corruption is because they have immunity. They can do this and nothing happens to them. We, the taxpayers, pay the bill.
So the mission statement you have is the Accountability Act will remove the financial immunity granted to prosecutors, police officers, correction officers, and firefighters from committing acts of corruption and violation of civil rights. Individuals can be held personally liable. Now, let's go back, and we're going to just look at this a little deeper, because the qualified immunity takes place after the prosecutors fail to bring a criminal action, or if they do, and in addition to that criminal action, that civil action is where the damage award comes in. And so that damage award, if they find that these officers, firefighters, prosecutors, whomever, have violated someone's civil rights, then there is a money award. And as you pointed out, that money award to the victim comes from our tax dollars. So not one penny of that $12 million, for example, in Breonna Taylor's case, not one penny of that money comes out of the perpetrator's pocket. It comes out of the taxpayer's money. And so, and what we're really looking at here is that there is no accountability. There, people who are in these government jobs don't lose their jobs. That prosecutor is a government worker. That prosecutor does not lose their job. And so this is a way to actually say, hey, you are a government employee, and you need some protection, because government employees would be afraid to do anything because they would be afraid they were always going to get sued, right? So now how do we prevent them from saying, well, why should I do my job at all if anybody can come and sue me and take my house or, you know, make me pay out this money personally?
Well, I mean, they can't take the house. What they can do is pay them $50,000 or 5% of a settlement. But you see, we have to have these type of mechanisms in place, because in this case, right, it's not that you just wait for the lawsuit for the civil action to take place. No, the Attorney General is responsible now, all right, which I'm putting another power in his hand, to investigate this and eliminate this pattern of corruption. We have too many cases, Gloria, nationwide, of this type of corruption. And I'll give you an example of one of the reasons why I wrote this. I have a girl named Kalani Yuhara, and she's from New Mexico. The mother drove all the way down from New Mexico in her car with her son to come see me to take on their case because her daughter was being sexually harassed by a colonel in the Air Force. And her daughter was in an Army ROTC program, okay? And what happened was she's a very beautiful girl, and they try to get her caught up in a sex ring. Now, the girl recorded this. She made recordings and all these things and reported it. But since the people that she reported these acts on were so powerful, the prosecutors, the federal prosecutor, the FBI got involved, and they were covering up for the military. And this girl was, they put a 37-page complaint of charges against Kalani, 37 pages. Do you know, Gloria, and this is the first time I've ever seen this in my entire work history, they filed this gigantic complaint, and when it went in front of the grand jury threw it out. They did not believe the FBI. They did not believe the prosecutors. They thought they all lied, and they threw it out. This girl was supposed to walk free. Now, they were lying, falsifying evidence, and now this family's got a multimillion-dollar lawsuit against the government, against the city. And you know who's paying? We are, the taxpayers. And this poor girl doesn't get justice. So, what you know, this is what inspired me to write the Accountability Act. You know, and, you know, right now I'm fighting her case and I'm supporting, you know, the mother. You know, actually, if anybody's out there, please support her. It's Kalani, K-A-L-A-N-I, Yuhara. U-E-H-A-R-A. I'm going to say that again. Kalani, K-A-L-A-N-I, Yuhara, U-E-H-A-R-A. And if you can, go on a GoFundMe page. We are, you know, trying to help this girl, and the evidence is overwhelming. And when you see her face, I promise you, your heart's going to melt. I mean, she's just a lovely.
Okay, and Manuel, are you still with us? Well, and Manuel's his other proposed legislation that we initially discussed was the Department of Civilian Justice, and so the Accountability Act and the Department of Civilian Justice, and that is a department that would be statewide that will hold the prosecutors and judges responsible. Because I've said many times on this show, I will continue to say, our system needs not just criminal justice reform, but prosecutorial reform. If we're not going to reform the prosecutor's office and the power they have and the subjectivity they have at this point, then reforming the criminal justice system is going to fail. Because if the prosecutors are not going to prosecute in these cases involving police officers, they're going to turn their back. And because they work hand in glove with them. And if the prosecutors are going to prosecute these people of color and others based on the word of police officers when they know that it's a bogus case, then there's got to be a way for us to reform the prosecutor's office. And I believe there should be a whistleblower's department within the prosecutor's office so that the good prosecutors are not turned bad and that we know what's going on within the prosecutor's office. Because right now it is shielded in a wall just as thick as the wall we see with policing. So your Department Absolutely. Of Civilian Justice, tell us more about that.
Well, I wrote the Department of Civilian Justice bill. Like you said, it's an oversight agency that's going to have oversight and be able to hold hearings and prosecute these corrupt prosecutors and cops and so forth statewide. But I have great news for you, Gloria, actually for everybody. I now officially have the Department of Civilian Justice bill becoming now a nationwide bill. The new Congressman Bowman-elect has now met with me and has now agreed to sponsor this legislation and make it one of his platforms. in Washington. So I'm going to be going to Washington, and we're going to be pushing for a judiciary hearing to have this nationwide, this new agency that will provide justice to everyone. But the Accountability Act is so important that it reinforces the Department of Civilian Justice. So when I showed it to the new congressman, he loved it. And so now we're going to make both of them into a federal legislation, and it's going to be nationwide. I have the NAACP backing me, and I'm going to tell you, this is something we have to have, because, again, there's too many cases of judicial corruption. And it starts, people think it starts from the police. No, it starts from the judges all the way down to the prosecutors, then to the police. And this is why these prosecutors facilitate the corruption that is going on. And they know what's going on. This is why this system is needed. Like you said, we have to have a mechanism where whistleblowers can report corruption without fear of retaliation. And this is what the Accountability Act will allow, and this is what the Department of Civilian Justice will allow. But it will do something more important. It will protect people like Kalani's mother who try to report corruption and the system attacks them. It will protect people like Prakash, all right, who's another kid who's in jail, and the judge falsified and didn't let evidence in, Judge Kenneth Holder, and he's currently in jail now. It will protect another person, which is Joel O'Farrell, who the judge gave him a poor black family a $15 million bail, higher than El Chapo's bail, to a kid who doesn't have any prison time, no rest history. And this is the type of corruption that the Department of Justice will be able to address. Currently, right now, we have millions of people who don't have an ability to report it. Now they will.
And so we've watched this somewhat languish. It languished a little bit in New York. It had a little bit of light, but it seems to be taking hold more so in Connecticut and North Carolina, from what you've said to me before.
Absolutely. They're running. North Carolina is about to vote on it. Senator Dennis Bradley was the one that sponsored me for the Department of Civilian Justice. And it passed the committees, and now it's going up for vote. And then North Carolina has been running full speed ahead now with the Accountability Act and the Department of Civilian Justice. And the one I wrote for North Carolina is one of the most robust versions of the bill. I mean, it covers everything from the civil rights to prosecutorial misconduct to prosecutors hiding evidence to police abusing people to Department of Corrections and so forth. And so now they are in the process of putting it forward with Senator Dan Blue. All these individuals and Frank Serpico, who's the one who collaborated on the bill with me from the movie Serpico, will be going with me to Washington and supporting this for the entire nation. Gloria.
So these last 2 moments, I want to spend on 2 things. One,
sure.
Tell people since you're not a lawyer, and you have been in the military, you've worked in counterintelligence, you have a certification from Homeland Security, you're a private investigator, you're like this superhero, mighty every guy. And so as this every person, every man out there, but well-built, of course, with giant muscles, how did you then decide you're going to create legislation?
Well, you know what? The greatest gift that we have as Americans that many of us don't know or we don't take advantage of is our First Amendment right. And the First Amendment lets you have the ability to write law. It lets you have the ability to petition the government to correct the grievance. This is the one difference that America has in all the countries in the world. Again, everybody, you know, and I'll teach it to you all in one word, RASPP. Freedom of religion is R. Freedom of A is freedom of assembly. S is freedom of speech. P is freedom of press. And the last P that everybody forgets is freedom to petition the government to write a bill to correct an injustice. This is what makes America great. Yeah, we got problems. We're not perfect. But what makes us great is that a pissed off American citizen like myself can sit down, write a bill proposal, and change the law. Let me say that again. Change the law. We can do that. And if you don't know how to do it, call me, 347-867-6242.
I will help you do it, because this is something that we have to do. Right now, we are in a legislative revolution. Right now, this country is divided like it hasn't been since the Civil War. And we have to get together and exercise our rights. And this is one of the most important rights we have, to write bills to correct these problems. And, you know, like you said, I'm not a lawyer. I'm just a pissed off American who knows his rights and knows how to use them. And let me say that again. I know my rights. Everyone needs to know their rights. You got to know those first 10 Bill of Rights, the Bill of Amendments. You have to know it. Because if you don't know the Bill of Rights, those first 10, trust me, you're weak. And you're vulnerable to all this corruption that's out there. And this is what has empowered me. And working as a private investigator, seeing all this corruption, seeing all these mothers, like Kalani's mother, like Joel Farrell's mother, like Bakasha's mother, Nadani, you know, calling me and begging me for help. And then I realized the help they need from me is to change the system. And that's what I'm doing. And I need everyone to get out there and support this. You know, you can download the bills from my website, Black Ops Private Investigators. Go on my website and you will see the bills. I put them as a PDF so that everybody in the nation can download it and make it theirs for their state. That's why I put it there. So everybody has an example. All you have to do is change the name from New York to Kentucky, from Kentucky to Nebraska, from Nebraska to California, to Virginia, to West Virginia. You can change the name on it, and it will work for your state. It's my dream, Gloria, to have an agency that is a franchise of justice nationwide that will give equal justice, that will serve to the people equally no matter where we go, so that no one who's white, black, yellow, brown will ever be afraid to report this corruption, and they'll know that they're going to get justice. And what makes this two bills unique, Gloria, is that I incorporated the part that people, it will be done by investigators who are not ex-cops, who are not ex-lawyers, who are not correction officers. They are regular people who are trained to be investigators. So we can ensure that Kalani gets a fair investigation. We can ensure that Joel Farrell gets a fair investigation. We can ensure that Prakash gets a fair investigation, and all these other hundreds and thousands of people out there that are not getting it, all right? You know, I've had the greatest privilege of being a father. The second greatest privilege is being a United States counterintelligence officer with the 18th Airborne. And I'm retired now. But one thing I learned as an Army officer and leading American soldiers is that I don't complain about a problem. I come up with a solution. I say, let's sit down and work it out. This is what I've done. I've come up with a solution. It's a template to provide a mechanism of justice. And I'm very happy with now, finally, God and the support of the NAACP and all these states that are backing me now. It's now going to a national bill. But I still need the regular mom, the regular citizen out there, again, to back this bill, again, to write more bills. And that's why I tell you, please get a pen and paper, because when you listen to Law of the Land, we educate you. Gloria Marshall brings knowledge and enlightenment with her show. Please, take down my phone number, please. 347-867-6242. 347-867-6242. And
thank
I will
you.
Help you write these bills.
Thank you, Manuel. We're out of time now, but you will be back. As we always say, God willing and the creek don't rise, as I borrow from Hugh Hamilton. Thank you so much for being with us, and protect yourself, because you know when you're doing a good work, there are those who will not want that to follow through. But you know how to do that, my brother. All right. Thank
Amen.
You so
thank
much,
you.
Manuel Gomez. All right, then. This is Law of the Land with Gloria J. Brown Marshall. And next up, after this musical break, we're going to be talking about my new play, Shot, about this issue of police-involved civilian shooting. Yes, I wrote a play about it. It's a short play. There's going to be a reading for it on Saturday at 2 p.m. via Zoom, and you are all welcome to watch it. And it's about what happens when a black teenager and a white cop meet on a corner, and the title of it is Shot. We'll be right back, and we'll talk with the person who has been the founder of the conference. This is the conference that the entire festival, arts festival, as well as the conference involving political panels and so much more will be a part of. And so that's Kim Westcott and the director of the arts festival, Mo Beasley, both of them back with us. As Manuel Gomez inspired me, inspired you, I'm sure, to stand up for your rights. That line he gave of the First Amendment is one of my favorites in the Constitution, the right to petition the government for a redress of grievances. That's the last line of the First Amendment, and so few people ever repeat it. So you know I've got a constitutional crush on Manuel. But at this point, we also want to look at the different ways in which we can learn more about these issues. And I have with me Kim Westcott, who's the founder and producer of the Community Service Society's Full Participation is a Human Right Conference and Arts Festival. Kim, I have to say, for full disclosure, is a friend of mine. She is also brilliant. Brilliant. And I have known her for many years, and I'm so glad to have her on the program today. And she is at Community Service Society, a 175-year-old anti-poverty organization. And you're also a teacher of race representation, criminalization, exclusion, and focusing on the criminal justice system. Kim Westcott, welcome.
Oh, man. Thank you so much. It is such a pleasure to be here with you. You know how much I love you.
Yes. And what made you, like, I've just talked to Manuel Gomez before you, a guest on the program, and I'm always inspired and curious about how people decide on a certain journey. And what really was the impetus for Community Service Society's Full Participation is a Human Right Conference?
Yeah. Thank you for asking that. Well, really, the purpose is to bring people together to better understand the conditions we're living in and our struggles. And this cuts across the board. The fight for housing, food security, work with dignity for a living wage, a self-determined community with resources, healthcare, everything that we need to survive. And to do this, we engage in conversation and we form connections to try to share a vision for a society that's committed to growth and development, not racial dominance and violence and punishment. We can organize to move beyond these struggles for collective action. So really, the Full Participation as a Human Rights Conference and Arts Festival comes out of the Black struggle to live as a full human being in a society rooted in colonization. And that means, as you know, that the structures of the society that determine social position and the accesses to resources are racialized. And really more to the point, because all of the struggles for what we need to live have been presented as separate and atomized. You know, we see the struggle for the right to housing, for right to work with a living wage. All of these things are treated as separate. And when a person even returns home from prison, each one of these struggles is overwhelming. And so when people are suffering, when you're buckling under structural racism coming out of the history of our country, this becomes the struggle for subsistence and not to be able to live and fully participate in the community.
And so you saw these things. You've worked with them as someone with a law background as well as a doctorate, and you said, I need to do more. And this conference came to you in what form? I'm always inspired by how people decide to go from wishful thinking to actually putting something in action.
Well, it came from the work that I was also doing at the Community Service Society. Our legal department is engaged with people who are struggling every day to come back to the community. And the basic things that were available were just not enough. You know, the stigma of punishment compounded by race. And it was clear that just working in the law, while very important, was moving us in one direction. But there are many struggles,
and you see it across different different forms in the arts, in program development. There are multiple people out there doing incredibly important work, basically trying to say, look, we need all of these things to be able to live a meaningful life. And so it was my frustration, I think many people's frustration, that you need more, and you need to work intersectionally and to link movements and to link struggles with an understanding and a value set that we're not just fighting for, give me this, you know, please give me this room today. We need to articulate a set of values that inform our norms. And those norms, I'd like to believe, are well-grounded in human rights to the extent that they set out affirmative obligations for people to have what they need, and that it's expanding. You know, that's beyond just, I need housing today. It's what we need to live to have a purposeful life with growth.
And you decided, and for this conference, which begins this week, it actually begins tomorrow, correct?
That's right. It starts with an interview with Amy Goodman and Professor Rose Brewer of the University of Minnesota, who's a stalwart scholar activist. She was involved in the Floyd uprisings this summer. She's been directly involved in influencing the changes in policing. So that happens tomorrow evening, starting at 6:30.
And this is what's come out of the positive part, if we can say that, of this pandemic, is the ability through Zoom and all these other platforms to actually have people from around the country, around the world, at our fingertips. And so that's here right. We have a conference that's free, open to the public, full participation is a human right, and that's full-participation.org. And we are going to now see our own Amy Goodman and many scholar activists from around the country on these platforms that are being presented through this conference. And that's you can right. go on the full participation, full-participation.org website and register. Everyone must register. That is very important that we do that. We have to register in order to get access to all this information, all these scholars. And also at the end of this three-day panel discussion of these very important issues, and tell us, is housing, is mass incarceration, what are some of the other issues that are being discussed?
Absolutely. So there's housing, there's a panel on the new labor movement for the new worker. These are all on Thursday. Why healthcare is a human right. We then get into a panel on decarceration, so divesting from punishment to invest in community. Just Enough for the City, which is moderated by Johanna Fernandez, Professor Fernandez from WBAI. And then I'm so proud to say there's your panel. You are a stalwart, fighting for what we need. And this is a new platform for people in the 21st century, so we can get out there and do these things. And that's on Friday evening from 6:30 to 8:30. And the brilliant thing about you is that not only are you here in your legal scholar advocate capacity, you're also a remarkable writer. And I'm excited for you to also have some discussion about the Arts Festival, which is connected with this, because really the arts lead the way in terms of people visioning for the future. And so I'm excited about that.
Well, Mo Beasley, who is director of that arts festival, is also an activist. He's also an artist and a writer and a spoken word aficionado. And he and I are going to be in a conversation earlier in the day at 12. But at 2 p.m. on Saturday, that's when we're having our premiere. And this play of mine, Shot, is premiering on this platform, the full participation conference platform for the world. So this is our world premiere, and it's 2 p.m., and it's about what happened on that corner when the shot rang out and a black teen fell to the ground and the white officer stood above him. And from there, we go forward. It's a short play, only about 35 minutes, but I believe it's very powerful. And the actors, Stephanie Berry, is just so fantastic. And Mike Timoney, who plays the officer, and we have Khalil Adams Pilgrim, who's playing the teenager, and directed by Jeffrey Thompson. It is a magnificent piece of work, and not because I wrote it. I have great plays. Not everything is fantastic, I have to say myself. But this one actually is fantastic. The actors really bring this to life, even on a platform like, you know, Zoom that we're looking at, and it's not the kind of live theater we're used to. But I also want to go back to the full participation, and that's full-participation.org. That's where you go to register, and you have to register for each and every one of these. So if you register for one, it doesn't mean that you're going to get what's necessary to enter the other platforms to see the other guests. My program, I guess my panel on Friday at 6:30 that I'm moderating, the guests there, I mean, are fantastic. Maya Wiley is on that panel, David Jones. I mean, this is amazing.
Right. Yeah, it's really very exciting, that conversation, for sure.
And what I like about that conversation is going to be somewhat unusual, because we're going to have to give people marching orders. What are we going to do? The question becomes, if either way it goes after November 3rd, if we're still here, how are we going to make a difference? How are we going to make a difference?
Right.
And that becomes something that I think activists, and activists can be weekend warriors. You don't have to be an activist all week long. You can use whatever skill base you have during the week to help the community on the weekend. So being a weekend warrior, you need to actually learn more about what is going on in the world, in the community, and this is where you get your juice. These types of conferences is where you get the substance that you need in these discussions, these arguments, and as what happened with you and with Manuel and with me and so many others, there's a nexus that comes between frustration and when you decide you're going to get up and do something. And that nexus is what makes an activist, because an activist is someone, wherever you are, who decides to act. Let's go back to the conference for a moment. And what do you want people to get out of this conference?
Oh, my. Well, for one, I want people to feel that they've experienced a lot of different experiences and perspectives, that they've been enriched, that they have the opportunity for conversation. We have breakouts, and that there is a synergy where people can find others to partner with, to join with, so that they can get out there and feel connected and supported to do the things that you're talking about as a weekend warrior, as a person who has commitment, is working in different areas, to see that these are all they're interdependent struggles. You know, we are struggling for what we need, not just, little crumbs here and there. So I'm very excited that this can be the place for that kind of exchange. And through the arts, to have that vision and community that it so often brings. I'm excited that's the experience.
But you have, being a little shy, I'm telling you, when I say Kim Westcott is brilliant, she is. She has an interest in the arts from an early age and is a graduate of Yale, received a law degree from Rutgers, has a master's in social work, and a PhD from Columbia. So when I say she's brilliant, attest to that. And I'm not saying brilliant in a way in which, and this is what bothers me about people who have been able to attain education and have affluence and influence in this country. Instead of staying hidden away on Mount Olympus, you know, watching the rest of the world and go through its machinations, she's on the ground, taking that education and all of her interests and putting them together to create a conference like this. That it's in its third year. And so here we are trying to make this conference even better, but it takes you to attend it, because from this you get the inspiration. And you can sit in your own living room. You don't have to get dressed. You can just watch this happen, take notes, and gain from these experts. This is just brilliant.
You're very, very kind, but It's all of these things. It's hearing your show. It's knowing there are people out there that are accessible that can give us this information. So now we can plug in. And I am excited about that.
Well, in our last seconds together, once again, tell them the website and what they need to do so that they can participate. Because remember, full participation is a human right, and we want them to participate. So tell them how they can best do it.
Absolutely. So please, on the website, it's full, just full, and then F-U-L-L hyphen participation.org. You can even type into your browser full participation or full participation as a human right. I think that's probably the first thing that comes up right now is the conference. And then you'll see there's just a whole array of things to pick from on the calendar in terms of panels or breakouts and the arts festival. And I cannot commend more what Mo Beasley, who is the artistic director for that festival and producer, he has put together an amazing, uplifting, just meaningful panel of just different events, music and poetry and this play, which is so significant. And it's woven together with a message and an opportunity for us to come together. So I really commend everyone to also please experience the Arts Festival, because it's integral to this in so many ways.
It is. Shawana Vaughn is going to be there, and she is the founder and director of Silent Cry, and that's on Saturday, the 24th. The Soul Folk Experience is an outstanding, talented circle of songwriters and instrumentalists. We have Ben Groskop, who uses the power of song to amplify and accentuate the ideas and values of transformation and societal growth. Apache Brown is going to be there. Royalty Weldon, Belle is on the piano, and she's a singer, poet, and rapper from Miami. Quilts in Queens, Gallery 35 are sponsors, and other people who, in other entities who are making this great. This is the coming together of so much, and I thank you so much for joining me today, Kim Westcott, and I know you must be exhausted juggling so many things, Community Service Society Community Service Society is a great organization in its 175 years, but I'm also sure they understand what they have, the benefit of having you on their team and bringing this conference together. And we as a society appreciate your efforts as a scholar and an activist. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to be here. And I look forward to seeing you later in the week.
Wonderful. This is Gloria J. Brown Marshall, and you've been listening to Law of the Land. And as you've heard, there is so much going on. Can you participate in all of this? Can you be a part of it? Can you make a difference? Will you stand up? Will you give to BAI 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602? We only do this because you allow us to do it. I can't sit in my living room and make this happen. I have to use the power of this radio station to help amplify my voice and my message and the voices and messages of so many people you hear on Law of the Land every Tuesday. How can we do this without you, without your support? And because we have to pay the electric bill in order to have a studio, we need you to actually call in 516-620-3602. And if you pledge $35, you will get a BAI mask, and we'll know each other. We'll know each other by our mask. We'll know who's in the BAI club. 516-620-3602. Law of the Land needs you, and so do all the other great shows on WBAI. Be a part of progress. Be a part of the solution. Empowered, you are fantastic and unstoppable. So until next week, for all of you out there who are trying as hard as you can, and I know you are, you're juggling so much, trying to stay alive and navigate all these things being thrown at us. And I believe in you, and I know we can do this. I know we can. Just stay strong, okay? And I'll see you, my friends, on the radio.